This is the Kinky Cast. This is an adult, sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. This is episode 60 of our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. Views expressed are not representative of the management of the Kinky Cast. In today's episode, we chat with Paula Smith on living the leather life. Here's your hosts, Lee and Chrissy.
Thanks, Max, and welcome to another edition of the Kinky Cast. And we have Chrissy sitting across the table. And with us today, we have Paula Smith.
Yeah, first of all, thank you for having me and for the opportunity to share.
Paula, thank you for joining us today. I was looking over your bio, and you're quite an interesting woman. Your accomplishments are all across the board. You've certainly had an interesting life. I was introduced to you by a friend of mine who met you at a leather event, and she told me that I really needed to reach out to you, that you were an outstanding person and someone that the community would really like to learn from. Would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself?
I am a 54-year-old gay woman, not always gay. I was married for 17 years. I have two children who are 33, 26, and I have a 13-year-old granddaughter. I am an RN. I went back to nursing school and became a nurse at 46 and finished my bachelor's degree in nursing at 50. I work with oncology patients now with insurance company. I do education and I'm insurance bit now at this point in my life. I have been into kink and leather for 18 years now, so almost two decades, and have been involved in the leather clubs that long as well. I've held numerous titles. I was the national title holder of American Leather Woman in 2000. I've helped produce events. I teach classes, just do a lot of community outreach. And I'm also in recovery. I am an addict and an alcoholic.
I'm looking at some of the information that you had shared with us earlier. You mentioned that you're the co-founder of CLAWS, the Coastal Leather Allegiance to Wisdom and Service, that you also helped co-found Low Country Leather. And I know several people that have been participating in their events. That sounds like a lot of fun. Would you care to talk about either of those groups?
Low Country Leather is the most recent club that I co-founded here in Charleston. It's a Levi Leather Club, and we're open to all genders. We are also open to all walks of life, whether you're gay, bisexual, heterosexual, trans. We're open to everyone. Anybody that's interested in Levi Leather, in community service. We founded the club. It's based on education, on camaraderie, and family building, and fundraising. So we're a group of people, men and women, who once a month we do Dine and Learns here, and we do education. We've done four so far. The first one we did on leather history, and I had a video about the Satyrs, who were one of the first motorcycle clubs and where a lot of the leather community came out of. The second one we had was rope bondage. I had a friend come down from Charlotte, and he did a great rope bondage demo. The third one we had was a leather care. My boy in service to my partner and I, he does great leather care and boot blacking. And we had a hands-on where everybody sat and connected with their leather and cleaned it and cleaned boots and kind of got the feel of not only wearing their leather but caring for it. And then most recently we had a hot wax demo. We've moved all our demos now we've just gotten a home bar, so it's open to all community, not just our club members. Yeah, we're a year old. CLAWS is out of Myrtle Beach, and I co-founded that. They're actually celebrating their 15th anniversary. That was my first baby that I co-founded. They're a great club, and I'm so proud that they're 15 years old now.
Yeah, CLAWS has been around for a really long time, hasn't it? 15 years is tremendous. Congratulations.
And I co-founded that back. Together. He came down here to Myrtle Beach. At that time, I was president of the Trident Knights down here, and then I eventually moved up to Myrtle Beach to found that club.
I have a question. Can you tell all of our listeners what you mean when you say Levi Leather Club? What is that for folks that don't know?
Levi Leather Clubs came out of the gay communities. You know, at one point in time, BDSM has always been around and kink. that's kind of the world I came from at first. I was, you know, my first event that I ever went to was in 97, and that was Black Rose 10. They had their first big open event, and it was a bunch of kinky people came together and took classes and played, and it was something that was pretty new, I think, at least to the East Coast, to have open play like that. You know, I've always been kinky, but I never realized that there were places to go to do, you know, engage in kink and find other people. I just kind of thought I was, you know, one of a few that had these weird things going on. But I found that I had a very good friend, and she introduced me to the events. And I was living here in Charleston at the time and really didn't have anyone here. I'd moved here for a relationship stupidly. I thought I was a slave at that point in time, and it was not a good situation. It was a very dangerous situation, in fact. Thankfully, my friend Lisa from D.C. Helped remove me from that situation. And I felt really alone. And I would travel to events and travel up to D.C. to spend time with my friend. But in the interim, I had this, like, this void. I knew that there were people like me, but I felt so alone here because I felt so different. And that's when Lisa had said, why don't you look for a leather club? And I had no idea what she was talking about. I didn't know there were such things. And we went to the first Thunder in the Mountains. We actually met on an online dungeon. That's where I kind of found BDSM initially.
So many people did. Was that CompuServe or AOL? Or
Actually called AOL, but it was also State of Insanity. It was out on the internet. And it was the SOI, State of Insanity dungeon. And that's where I met this man that was my master and then my best friend, Lisa. And so we ended up going to the first Black Rose, and then we went to the first Thunder in the Mountains, and I was hooked. You know, it was like all this energy with these people that were like me. And like I said, when I came home, I was, you know, I'd have this drop and then have no one. I could talk to people on the phone, but I didn't have anyone to share more with, and I needed more. So that's when I was introduced, well, I actually started searching on AOL at that time. I would do a search for anybody's name with leather in it in Charleston. Do you know how tedious that was on AOL in like the 90s? Luckily, though, I did. I found the club. Their name was Trident Knights, and they were a majority of gay leathermen, and there was one other woman in the club. That was my introduction to leather. Then I quickly learned the history of the leather clubs came out of the motorcycle clubs and out of World War II. The men came back from the war, and, you know, in the war they had a lot of camaraderie and a lot of wrestling and carrying on. And, you know, a lot of men that were married found that they had, like, these desires and didn't realize they were engaging in SM at times. And a lot of them would get together and they, you know, rode motorcycles. And runs in the leather clubs come from the motorcycle runs. If you ever hear of people doing the runs where a bunch of them ride from one city to another and then they get together and party and whatnot, that's where the gay clubs kind of came out of, the motorcycle clubs, because these were a group of men that all had something in common, and they all kind of liked, I mean, there was some rough sex and there was kink going on, and they would go out to the satyrs were from California, and they'd go out to the desert for a long weekend and get together. So the leather clubs kind of came out of that it was a subculture.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was. I know. Speaking about the satyrs, you reminded me of a video clip that someone had put up on FetLife, I don't know, maybe a year and a half ago, and it was an old clip of the satyrs, and it was talking all about their history, and it actually showed the guys on their bikes riding up to some location. I want to say up there were redwoods, I don't know, up in the mountains somewhere.
Yeah.
And they had a huge weekend festival. It was fantastic, and you know, it was just an incredible historical video that somebody had actually saved and preserved.
That's the one that I showed. It was I found it on YouTube. It was an hour long. Our club has a lot of young as in not chronological age, but that they're new to leather. So it was really a great intro for them to understand where our clubs come from.
Absolutely. I have a question for you. Now, you say that you were drawn to leather and you were interested in the BDSM elements too. So you went to the Trident Knights, which was gay leathermen, and you're not a leather man. How did you feel? How did you fit in? Were you accepted?
You know, at that time, I wasn't even a gay woman. I was bisexual. I had just gotten divorced and kind of was trying to find where I was in life. It was interesting because I've been really fortunate for a lot of years. I was the only woman at a lot of the runs here in the Southeast. There were a handful of us that we were the only one, or there might be two or three of us. The men were pretty accepting. I mean, you would have your occasional one that didn't want anything to do with you. But when you look back through history, there's always been some leather dykes that have kind of been there. I kind of just worked my way in. I didn't demand anything. I didn't push my way in. I showed up. And I started attending the meetings, and I got to be friends with them. And, you know, it wasn't anything that was given. It was, you know, I had to kind of put my time in and earn my way. I always talk to younger women now about, you know, you don't come in and demand. You earn your place at the table.
Right. There's no entitlement here.
That's the thing. Those of us that were around when there were so few women, we didn't expect anything. We showed up and just did the work. It just kind of happened. It evolved. I just knew that they were people that had, I won't say that there was a lot of BDSM and kink that I saw, but it was more the core values. The clubs, the difference I see with going to BDSM events and belonging to a club is the BDSM events, you can throw your leather on, you go to the weekend, you play, you come home, and you can put it away. You don't have to go through any steps to belong. You just pay your money and register.
Mm-hmm,
and there's
true.
Nothing wrong with that. Don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I came from that, and I think it's great. The thing with the clubs is that you've got to pledge. You just don't join a club. You have to put your application in. You have to be voted in as a pledge. And then you have to do a pledge ship. Our group, we've actually just changed things because we made it a little more stringent. You have to be an associate member for 3 months. An associate member does not have voting rights. They aren't expected to do anything. They don't have to make the meetings. But the reason we did that was to see how devoted people would be and to make sure we got people who really, really wanted to be there.
They want to put the time in, sure.
Right. So after 3 months, then, they can put in for their pledgeship, and then you have to pledge for 6 months. And during that 6 months, you have a mentor, you have to do reading, you have to do a pledge project, you have to carry a book around with you, and you're expected to like help and pitch in and sign off on things. So you've got to really be devoted. And then you're voted in. You're not guaranteed in after those 6 months. And when you're voted in, then we have an initiation. And at that point, you've earned your colors, and that's when you're presented your club patch. And that, you know, I'll never forget the first time I was presented my colors when I was with the Trident Knights. That meant so much to me because you worked for it. So with that, there's, you know, I know there's a lot of people now that kind of poo-poo how people talk about trust, honor, and respect, and that's not what it's all about. We forget about the sex. It is about the sex, but it is about the trust, honor, and respect, too. We hold things at a higher expectation and hold people accountable.
Yeah, that's lacking in a lot of areas today, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you ride, Paula?
I don't. I was always the bitch on the back of the bike when I had friends that rode. My goal was to have a bike after I graduated nursing school. And then I was getting my other degree in and didn't get the bike. And then at age 50, I had a stroke.
Oh, my.
I've lost 10% of the use of my right leg, which I'm fine. You would never know it. But my core center is kind of off and a little hesitant. I'm thinking I need a trike.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. We'll be right back after this word from the Southeast Leather Fest.
Make connections the day you arrive at Speed Networking. No need to act your age at our Littles pageant. Get really messy with us at the Splosh Party. Join us at Southeast Leatherfest, where we're erecting a vision.
Well, I'm erect, are you?
Oh, yeah.
Visit SCLeatherfest.com. Come to South June 11th through the 14th in Atlanta and erect your vision.
We're back with Paula Smith.
I was looking over your bio, and one thing that you mentioned was that you had some concerns about losing the Leather Dyke population. Can you talk about that a little bit?
You know, at one point in time, Leather Dyke was synonymous with gay women.
Where did that name come from, Dyke?
You know, that name's been around for a long time. Lesbians recoil at that term.
Mm-hmm. They do.
Yeah, it's kind of negative, but, you know, we empower words.
Right.
I feel that it's a strong word. And a lot of the women, the older women in the community, we connect with the word Leather Dyke. You know, I actually embraced it as a bisexual woman. I first read it when Pat Califia, who is an author, a female-to-male trans man, he had written a book called Doc and Fluff. He's written many books. In the leather community.
I've read some.
Yeah. And Doc and Fluff, it started out with the prelude, and he wrote in there the difference between lesbians and leather dykes. And I've written a piece. I have a lot of different writings that I keep notes on Facebook that people follow. I wrote about this, and I actually had some younger women that were really put off by this, but those of us that embrace it, I don't have it in front of me, but to kind of like briefly sum it up, his thing was that lesbians wear Birkenstocks. Leather dykes wear boots. Lesbians wear blazers, and leather dykes wear leather jackets. You know, he feels that lesbians want the 2.5 children in the house and the picket fence, and they want to fit into society, where leather dykes don't want to fit in. We want to make our own freaking place in society. And I said that clean.
I like that.
You know, it's not how we look, because, you know, I'm not a butch woman. I have some butch tendencies, but I wear makeup, I fix my hair, I do my nails. So it's not how you look, it's all attitude.
It's attitude, right.
It really is. And it's that walking into a room and owning it.
Right. Power.
And if you ever see, you know, some of the leather dykes that you know them. I mean, we walk in and we're, you know, you don't even have to say anything. So it's all that attitude. The problem is that so many of the younger women today, they don't even embrace the term gay. Not only younger women, the younger generation, they feel they're more queer. Their gender is more fluid. So they don't necessarily embrace that. So, you know, a lot of the older women, we're kind of in fear that we're a dying breed. And not only that, but a lot of our butch women they're transitioning and they're becoming men. So the leather women population is kind of changing.
That's interesting. I would really like to know what our listeners think about that. So anyone listening to this podcast, please send a comment to the Bashville link if you don't want to be identified and share your thoughts. What do you think is happening in your communities as well? I'm just going to put that out there. I'm curious. I've noticed it happening locally here in Nashville. And it's interesting that you say it also. It's happening in the circles that you travel in. And I'm just curious what the rest of the country might think about that, because our podcast is heard all over the United States and in many countries around the world. So it'd be interesting to hear what kind of feedback comes back from that. I hate to think that that's happening everywhere, that people are losing that type of identity and instead becoming fluid, which is okay. I'm not saying that's wrong, but I think there's some, as you said, real power in owning that component of yourself and identifying and being true to that if that's how you feel.
You said that you have two children, and my question to you is, how do your children feel about you coming out to, and how did they feel when you came out to them?
You know, my kids, when I got divorced, my girls were 14 and 8. My 14-year-old was old enough to make her choice as to whether to stay with her father were to leave with me, because I was planning on taking them with me. And she was a daddy's girl. So it was a really hard decision. I didn't split the girls. And he and I shared custody until I moved to Charleston. And then I got them every other weekend. They were 4 hours away. You know, that was a time in my life that I was kind of selfish and it was hard. I made some bad decisions for my children. But my girls were down here, and I'm very open about my life. I've never hidden behind anything. They became, you know, immersed with my friends in leather. We would have Christmas and Thanksgiving dinner with the guys. And when we did fundraisers, I mean, Thanksgiving, we would go and serve dinner at the homeless shelter, and my girls would come and do it with us. So the girls were surrounded by these guys, and I'll never forget, I don't have a great relationship with my ex, and when he found out, like, the girls being down here with gay men, he really had a hard time with that, and I said to him, they're safer with gay men than with anyone.
Yeah, true.
Guys, like, accepted my kids as family, you know?
Right.
Yeah. But the girls, I'm sure that as they grew, I know that there have been times when, even now as adults, if something comes up, my oldest had said to me recently, maybe I'm going to get off your Facebook account. She said, not because, you know, she said, just there's some things that I'm not totally comfortable with. I don't talk to them about polyamory and exact things in my life. They know that I engage in things, and they don't need to know if I teach needle play and, you know, the different classes that I teach, because there's just some things that your kids don't need to
know. Right. Right. Yeah, they don't need to go there. I have the same problem with my daughter.
Yeah, they know that I'm kinky. They know that they're very proud of the work I do. They've told me more than, you know, once that they're proud of the work I do and the person that I've evolved into. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that it's necessary for, I don't want to know their lives, their sex lives.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I asked that question because coming out to your children, whether you're gay or straight or whether you're BDSM or kinky or whatever it might be, it's difficult. Some people in the community, in the local community, think that it's a rite of passage that you have to come out to your children and, you know, you should share your life with your children. And mm-hmm. I happen to believe that my children will find their own way in their mm-hmm. sexual appetite. There's just no way I could even tell them some of the things that we do.
Yeah.
You know, I would find that very difficult.
I know my daughter attacks me quite frequently. She's almost 17 and struggling with her own identity, and she found a copy of the master's manual, which she read, and I have a playroom upstairs, and she has not been into it ever, as far as I know, but you know how children have ways. They find things, and she accuses me of having whips and chains upstairs. That's my sex room, she says. That's your sex room, Mom. And so, you know, I'm just not ready to go there with her. I don't even know how to approach it, but that's a whole nother episode.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
They do know, I mean, when I came out as gay, they've been very supportive. My partner and I have been together 7.5 years, and we're actually getting married on August 9th.
Congratulations.
Thank you. They just passed it in South Carolina.
That is surprising. You know, I used to live in Beaufort, South Carolina, which is, you know, the low country.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was shocked when, because I came from Orlando when I got married and my husband was in the military and we moved there. And it shocked me that the stores closed at midnight and the bars closed at midnight on Saturday. And it was just like a time warp.
It still is very much behind the times.
Mm-hmm.
It passed because it was lumped in with Virginia and North Carolina.
Okay.
That's okay. We don't care why it passed. We just are happy that it did pass.
That is amazing. Good for you.
So my girls love my partner. You know, they're very open. And you know, my daughter sent me the other day something that my 13-year-old granddaughter, my daughter's a single mother. My granddaughter Reagan was at her dad's house. And apparently they'd been shopping with her. She was with her grandmother. She saw these gay marriage bracelets, and she wanted to buy one because she read the story behind it. Her grandmother, she doesn't believe in gay marriage, and she wouldn't get it. So Reagan texted her mom and said, you know, I think we need to buy these. They're in support for Grandma and Paula and Janice. She said the story behind it is about a 21-year-old who was so depressed because people put him down because he was gay, and you know, when he came out and he couldn't get married, and he committed suicide. And she said, so this is something great to get behind, that so we can support the gays, is what she said.
Her heart and head are in the right place.
Yeah, how great.
You mentioned that you have a polyamorous lifestyle. Do you have a leather family with multiple partners?
My partner and I we didn't claim monogamy. We don't like that word, but we've never gone outside of our relationship. And we've just recently collared a boy, a female boy. Yeah, I guess we are poly now. We never considered ourselves. It's early evolving. Yeah, it's building our family.
That's great. Yep, that's wonderful. And did I hear you say that your newest addition, the boy that you brought in, is a bootblack as well?
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful.
Aftercare, yeah.
Wonderful.
A boot whore, so I'm very happy.
Excellent. I'm sure you're going to keep him very busy. One thing I want to talk to you about, this pertains to addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Being involved in a 12-step program. I recently started attending a 12-step program, the ACA program. I'm curious. I know that I followed you on Facebook and other places, and I know that you make it an effort to attend meetings regularly. And I'm curious, how does that relate to your interactions in the scene and in the community? Do you find that it's made you more resilient, that you are able to be more tolerant or understanding, or how has it helped you in the scene?
You know, I had a relapse. I had been 5 years clean, and I relapsed when I hurt my back and they put me on Percocet. So I did the 12 steps like 6 years ago, 6.5 years ago, and worked them and worked a good program. I think this relapse, though, has allowed me to look at my program differently. And I just spoke about this in a meeting this morning. I had an epiphany this week. Step three is turning your will over to God, or a God as you understand him. I don't practice Christianity anymore. So I have a higher power in my life. I don't call it God. I compartmentalize things so much in my life. And I think that the first time around, what I did was I worked my steps for my addiction with drugs and alcohol, but not with the rest of my life. And I've realized that my whole life is affected by my addictive personality. I will always be an addict. I don't care how many meetings I go to. I don't care how long I'm clean and sober. I am hardwired as an addict. And my program now, I'm working it differently, and I'm trying to apply it to all aspects of my life. So it does make me sometimes more tolerant, sometimes not. I think that I know that I'm more compassionate because I understand the addictive mind a little better. And sometimes people get into BDSM for the wrong reasons.
Yes, they do.
I think that I don't play my addiction out and any history of abuse or anything out through my play. I'm very cognizant of that. So I think that my 12 steps and my being in touch with myself and being in touch with everything around me does help to be a little more tolerant. I will say it does help because I'm very open and honest, and I've taken meetings to different events, and I've had a lot of people come to me and talk to me about addiction. Not quite sure if they are or they aren't, but that could just feel somewhere safe and someone to talk to.
Do you facilitate meetings at different events? Do you set them up and invite folks to come, or do you just come in as a speaker?
Last year at International Ms. Leather, I ran all the meetings there, and I've taken meetings to different runs, different events. If they want me to take in meetings, or if I'm going and I'll talk to them about take meetings, and then I just take everything from my AA stuff and I'll set up meetings there.
For my program, I'm stuck on the fourth step.
Oh. That's a tough one.
Yeah, I can't find the courage to face my demons, and I have to face them and knock them out. So it's going to be a process. But I commend you for all the hard work that you're doing. It's wonderful, and keep it up.
Thank you.
It's hard, but it's so worth it.
And I never thought that, you know, I know years ago I would see people who had 30 years sober, and they were making 5 and 7 meetings a week, and I was like, oh, God, I don't want to be that person. And you know what? I am that person. I have to. If I had diabetes, I would have to take insulin every day or metformin or whatever you needed to keep your diabetes under control. I have a disease called addiction, and there's no pill for it, but there are meetings for it.
Right. And support and people who love you.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all there. You've been working to bring women together, mm-hmm. reach out to all the communities, pansexual, straight, gay, whatever. You've got your fingers in every pie, and you're working to bring people together. What do you see for women in the future in the scene?
Well, that's actually kind of where my goal. It's interesting that my goal is there because I belong to the men's community for so long. I've never been one that had girlfriends. I've always been one of the guys. So I never had a best friend in high school, never had, you know, really close women friends. Women intimidated me. So for years, I got beat up because I would go to events and hang with the men if there were women there. And, you know, they would say, well, you should be with the women. And I really didn't want to be with the women. And suddenly here, all of a sudden, I'm having women's play parties. I'm having women's dinner. So I don't know how that happened. Really don't.
It's called maturity, I think.
Yeah. So I think for me, I enjoy female space, women's space only. I enjoy playing. I think that, you know, it's so funny because in 2000, when I was American Leather Woman, that's when the National Coalition for Sexual Freedom was just on the rise. And we were really working at making sure that everybody have common space and we all be able to play together. And that was my big thing. And here I am 15 years later. And now I don't think that's not the biggest, greatest thing. I think it's important for pansexual space. I really do. I also think it's very important to have male only and female only space mm-hmm. because women are different. We use our senses differently. We use our emotions differently when we play. And the energy that you can feed off of other women when you play is amazing.
Yes, it is.
So I think that it's really important to have some sacred space for women. At this point in my life, where am I? I like to think that I'm at a good place to mentor now. I would never call myself a leader. I think people who self-proclaim themselves leaders are kidding themselves. You earn that from other people.
That's very true.
I'm a mentor. I've walked a lot of roads. I've blazed some trails. I've got some great stories, and I love sharing them. So I think that, you know, it's imperative that I be able to surround myself with younger women to pass on the legacy, because if we don't pass it on, then we may lose it.
That's for sure. Or it's going to be twisted, corrupted, and watered down in some way that's so far from the truth.
Yeah. Yeah. So I do, during American Brotherhood weekend in Chicago, I had actually co-produced that for a couple years, but I attend every year, but I 2 years in a row did a Leather Women's Dinner. The first year I had 35 women, I think, and my goal this year, past year, was to have 50. We actually had 69 women in a restaurant and shared our stories, and I had at one point them all stand up. And if you were a year or less in the community, sit down, and then 5 years, sit down, and 15. So it was nice to watch, to see the years of experience in that room. And at one point, we had 3 women with 40 years still standing.
Wow.
That's fantastic. I really hope to meet you. Are you going to be at SELF this year?
I'm teaching at SELF again. I taught last year.
Fantastic.
What are you teaching at SELF?
I'm teaching, again, needles, but I'm doing it with a spiritual aspect.
Ah. Okay.
And I'm teaching a class on aging. I call it To Infinity and Beyond, Getting Up, Keeping Up, and Staying Up After 50.
You mean after 10 o'clock?
A lot of us are getting older and, you know, we get hip dysplasia, shoulder dystonia, you know. Yeah.
Macular degeneration.
Yeah. And it's an interactive class. I did it at Will a couple years ago, and it's a class so we can all kind of figure it out together. Mm-hmm. What works for you might work for me, the creative ways to get around things.
That's awesome. I hope to attend that when I'm at SELF.
Yeah, that'd be good. I know several months ago we had Slave Sherry and Master Blue.
I know them very well.
Okay, and they stayed here with us, with Woody and I, in our home, and it was a great weekend. It opened our eyes to leather and the protocols and just the purity of it all. It was just seeing them two interact with each other.
Mm-hmm.
It was just amazing. It was just their relationship seemed like it was so much deeper and so much more than what Woody and I are sharing, you know? And it was like, okay, I want some of that. You know? I want that leather experience. So I'm a newbie as far as the leather. I've heard people talk about leather, and I've been in the lifestyle here around Nashville since 2000. I was first involved in the Nashville Leather Alliance. Go figure, right? But it wasn't really anything about leather. It was more on BDSM. So I'm just learning the different aspects of leather rituals and just, you know, how you start off with your belt or your boots or you know, whatever it is. See, I don't know.
And that's, you know, not everybody does that, but, you know, a lot of the old school, and I don't use old guard. I use old school.
Yeah.
Old school leather people, you earn your leather. And especially if you're mentoring somebody, that's very important.
Mm-hmm.
There are people in my life that have received pieces of leather from me. Now, have I earned all my leather? No, I've bought a lot of it. I'm not going to lie. But I do have some pieces that I've earned that are very, very important to me.
It was just awesome seeing them too. And it might just be that they are just a beautiful couple.
Mm-hmm.
They really opened my eyes and made me start questioning. And I think that's what this lifestyle is all about, being around people who...
They push your boundaries,
yeah,
mentally, physically, emotionally,
right,
and spiritually. Help you evolve to see things you wouldn't normally see if you're willing to walk that path.
I'll have people talk to me about mentorship. And I just tell people, you know, sit back. I am a huge observer of life. I love watching people and I love watching interactions, and it's how I've learned a lot. You sit back and watch and look at things that you really like in people and then emulate those qualities.
Mm-hmm.
If you do that consistently and really work at being a good person, you know, I always tell people there's no brainer to protocol and whatnot in the leather community. It's called good manners.
Exactly.
Right.
If you know good manners, you kind of sit back and watch. It's not that difficult.
That's true. That's very true. Well, is there anything else that you would like to share with us?
My latest thing that I've really been wanting to do is, you know, for a while, the leather clubs, a lot of them have folded and they've not been real supportive.
That's true. There is really no leather at all here in Nashville. For a while,
yeah,
we had a group, the Conductors.
Remember the Conductors?
They're down to, I don't know, 8 guys or 6 guys, and it's
mm-hmm.
pretty much invisible. Every once in a while, I'll see a couple of the guys downtown, but there's yeah. nobody around.
I had a conversation with a friend of mine, and he had said, well, you know, the leather clubs felt that they were above everyone else and they kind of did it to themselves. And I really didn't ever see it that way. I guess I always say I'm a leather snob. You know, I come from a club. I'm very club oriented and that's very important to me. I could be one of those people, but my goal now is to really work at the clubs that are existing here in the Southeast, at least, to really kind of have us work together. I know that the tradesmen in Charlotte have really been pushing for that too. And, you know, we had the initiation of our new bar here February 28th, and we did a villains versus superheroes night, and it was hugely successful. And we had 11 clubs represented.
I saw photographs.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was great. I saw Slave Fairy was there.
Yeah, Fairy stayed here. Our house is always like filled with people. And Blue and Sherry stay here. Yeah, we had a house full. So my goal now is we're working with other clubs to make sure that we share with each other and kind of solidify. I'm really excited because I know a lot of the Centaurs from DC, and we're trying to have in the fall, we're looking at potentially having them charter a bus and bring a whole group of Leathermen to Charleston, and we're going to have a big party then too.
Oh, wow.
You know, it's about the clubs connecting, and that's my big goal now is to, I don't want to see the clubs die.
It's a valuable piece of our culture, and the work they do is very beneficial. If I were to go on a hunt to find a club, how would I do that? Do I have to know somebody? Do I have to know the secret handshake? Is there a password? How do I find the club?
Well, this day and age, I mean, you could always Google things, you know, leather club in whatever city you're in. You could also, you know, we have Facebook, so you could reach out to somebody else in the leather community. And if you asked me, if I didn't know, I know someone to ask. It's not a secret.
I know that people have asked about how do I learn, where do I go.
In the Southeast, we have Southeast Conference of Clubs. So you can always go to their webpage and see the clubs that are active in the Southeast. Our club is not part of it, so not all clubs are on there.
What is that called again, please? The
Southeast Conference of Clubs.
That's great. Thank you for sharing that.
And then in the Mid-Atlantic, it's MAC. So it's Mid-Atlantic Conference of Clubs. Those two, I'm not sure what they are in the Midwest or on the West Coast. But ask, just ask somebody, because, you know, if we don't know, we can find out.
That's great. I love to get straight stories. I hear so many stories. My way is the way. This is the way it's done. And it's just so bogus. I have to leave. But it's really, really refreshing to hear you speak and understand that you know what you're talking about. This is real.
It's passion. I don't call it a lifestyle. This is a life.
It's a life. Right. You didn't read a book and just decide this is what you're going to do. You're living it.
Yeah. And it is. When I was in the hospital in a uniform, I still was leather because it's in my heart and soul. It's how I live.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
It's not just wearing it.
Oh, that's fun and hot, too.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Paula. I really appreciate you taking time to talk to us tonight.
Thank you for asking me.
I'm honored that you found time, and I really hope that we can cross paths soon in South or who knows where.
Absolutely.
You have been listening to episode 60 of The Kinky Cast. The Kinky Cast is a production of Rooster in the Round. On behalf of Lee, Chrissy, and all our kinky crew, I'm Max. See you next week.